Hey everybody, how are you today? I'm Mark Chaffardini. Thanks for coming back for the Ghost See Talk podcast experience. Oh my God, what was that? What was that? Did you see a gremlin scurrying around? No, that is a tip off to who we're going to speak to today. We are speaking to the legendary, the intercontinental champion of rock, prog rock, synthwave, whatever you want to call it. He makes masterful music, puts it in your ears, and even sounds like a Scottish superhero. Anyway, we're excited to speak to Barry Burns of Mogwai. Barry, how's things in your world?
Very good, really busy. Had quite a good year. It was a lot busier than expected because things kept getting cancelled before, but now it really sort of worked itself out. So we had lots of work and lots of gigs where we were standing in for people who couldn't make it. So yeah, lots of little surprise shows to do. So it's been good, and then lots of work in the studio with score work and TV and film. So it's been a very busy year.
That begs the question, who could you possibly be cued in for? You guys are, you know, you're so unique with your sound. I mean, who were you replacing?
Yeah, the Strokes.
Okay.
And who was the other band? It was, I could never get their name right, King Gizzard and the something Wizard. Yeah, like, you know.
I know who you're talking about. Yeah, I can't
get
it right.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's quite confusing. So yeah, the Strokes one was in Primavera in Barcelona. And I think probably lots of people were disappointed to hear that we were going to replace the Strokes. But it turned out it was a really good show because we were in playing the next week anyway. So we ended up staying in Barcelona for a week. And I took my wife and kids over and we had a nice holiday as well.
That's fantastic. Well, talk to me about that, because I know that live music is what people have been clamoring for these past 2 years. So what's it like getting back on the road?
At first, it was a wee bit strange. You know, it was strange to be in a room with so many people or a festival. And I think you could kind of see that in the audience as well. They were a bit freaked out. And I think, you know, obviously the ticket sales for all the bands have been a lot. They were quite down at the beginning of this year. But it seems to have picked up again. So it seems all back to normal. And then after a few weeks, it just feels like you're back doing the thing that you always did. So, yeah, you get used to it quickly.
Well, who do you think was the most hesitant? The promoters, you as a band, or just the audience in general?
I think everyone has shared that because there was no insurance for COVID cancellations, because obviously there would have been a lot of them. So probably I think the promoters and the bands were very hesitant to do anything too quickly or too early. And we ended up cancelling or postponing quite a few shows, even last year, was it? So it was kind of, yeah, it was a bit of a worry. But I haven't been going to shows myself, so as an audience member, I haven't really been going to many shows at all. Maybe that's because I've got a couple of kids and one of them's very young as well. But yeah, there was lots of avoiding good concerts, which is a shame.
Well, speaking of kids, why don't we talk about it? As the Love Continues came out on February 19th. So if I get my math right, it's roughly 18 months old. It's walking. It has all its teeth. How has it grown in that year and a half?
Oh, it's a weird one, this one, because we couldn't tour it in the beginning. And it just felt like forever before we could go and play the tunes. And then we were worried about, well, it's been so long since people have listened to this record. Will they come to the shows? Because they're so used to it and maybe they don't feel like they need to see it live anymore. But that hasn't been the case. I think all the shows have been pretty good. Save a couple of countries like where people were really hesitant, which was Germany. And we usually do pretty well there, but we noticed that the shows were sort of not as well sold before. But yeah, to get back to your question, I think it's just been a strange one because we feel like we're ready to do the next record. And, you know, we haven't properly toured this one. It's usually almost 2 years of touring, and this has only been about a year, or less than a year, actually. So a bit weird.
Well, I have to say that there's some parallels to what people experience or expect when they go see live music, because theaters are having the same problem. Like, what's going to get people out, especially when they have the convenience of getting it from their sofa. But I think the key distinction is if it's an event, people will come because there are certain movies out there. I think like Elvis, for instance, that movie was an event. Very different from, say, a rom-com or a straight-up a drama. But I think that with live music, there's so much energy that I think people will go to that because you don't get that through your headphones. I think you can only get that on stage.
People were waiting a long time to go and do something normal again. And what's more normal than going to see four old Scottish guy and a young guy play music to some lights? There's not, I don't know how exciting we are to watch live because we don't tend to jump around like the young people that we are not. So yeah, so I don't know, but it was exciting to play the shows, and I think people really appreciated it when we started to go back.
Well, let's talk about the sound that makes Mogwai Mogwai. I mean, the thing that I'm most drawn to is sort of this what I call fuzzy buzzy distortion. And like, what do you, if you were gonna, since you said you want to work on the next album, what do you think is the shopping list to say, hey guys, we need this to be Mogwai, and this is what we love?
Well, for every record that we do and every soundtrack that we do, we always go and buy a bunch of, new things to like. I like to buy lots of synthesizers, so I've probably got too many now. But the other boys buy tons of pedals that are, as new as possible, like new technology, and then never read the manual and never work out how to use them properly, which I think is probably helpful to what we do because the less you know about something, the more interesting it can get sometimes, especially with musical stuff. Stuart, for example, will never open the manual on a brand new pedal, and then he'll complain that he doesn't know how to use it. And yeah, I have to show him. But it's generally what you want to do is change the palette of what you did for the last record, and if that's usually just buying, new toys, to see what you can do with them, and all the technology for like. Even how I record demos and stuff like that, it's good to be able to. Well, I use Ableton Live a lot when I'm recording stuff, and the more I learn about it, the more interesting stuff I can get out of it. So it's just sitting down and a lot of trial and error, really. There's a lot of that going on, even in the studio. We just keep trying stuff, and if it doesn't work, we use it anyway.
Okay. So you guys are like the Scottish equivalent of the Shags. You just sort of make it up as you go.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's clear that the experimentation has worked and that has really defined your sound. And I'm a huge fan of Kin. I was actually lucky enough to meet the Bakers and get to know them over the
Oh,
years.
cool.
I
Cool.
hosted one of their Q&As when they came through Dallas. But what I love about that, especially for your experience, is you got to do basically two albums. You did the score, which was sort of dictated by what was on screen, but then you expanded it to the actual album. Can you talk about the limitations, but the freedom of having the second album?
Yeah, it was quite difficult to get that together because if you've got maybe like a 1 minute cue, then you've really got to think about how do we make this interesting and make it a bit of a longer piece. And so there's a lot of thinking going on with that, and some of the stuff just wasn't working as a sort of long form thing. So there's a lot of pieces of music that are not on the records really that appear in the score. But you just have to sort of make that decision what's going to work as a longer thing. And then just go into the studio for, I think maybe another 2 weeks to sort of elongate the songs and re-record parts and stuff. And I really like that record. Like it was really stressful. I remember that when we were doing it. Just trying to make everything work, but it turned out great.
Well, I'm in a similarly creative industry. I work for an architecture firm, and I have plenty of discussions with my boss who tries to sort of throttle me back and say, this building needs to have less moves, or maybe this is, more refined. And so I imagine, and I've heard that dialogue between a composer and a director, but I could see what you mean if you've only got a window of time in a scene, you've got to hit it for, say, 30 seconds or a minute and a half. But a lot like Lamatos did an expanded album of Turbo Kid, and that's just I like when it can flourish, because I feel like every musician, every creative has just this wellspring that when you get the opportunity, you just let it, you know, uncork as it is.
Yeah, exactly. No, I just agree with that. I don't really have an answer for that.
No problem. Well, speaking of kin, I think one of my favorite tracks is Donuts.
Oh yeah, that's a good one.
You've got this great aerial view that the Bakers have done where Miles is driving the truck around his brother. And so it's kind of, you know, it's insinuating that his whole world revolves around his brother, and you called it Donuts because he's doing donuts. And I just love, yeah. I mean, it was like, I think that's some of the best music sort of video tree choreography I've seen in a long time. So what did you find the most inspiration from? Was it pictures? Was it reading the script? Was it talking to the Bakers?
There was a lot of dialogue between us and the boys. We were quite, they were really hands-on with stuff. And then they actually came to the studio in Glasgow for a few days to it's nicer when someone's there, you know, to make the process a bit faster. So yeah, they were really, they had great direction for what they wanted. They knew what they wanted, they knew what they didn't want, and they were very direct about that, which was actually, and so, sometimes quite funny, because I remember one time they were like, no, we hate this song. And I was like, dude, chill out. you can just say this isn't working. But it was actually, it was pretty funny when that one came through. Uh-huh. But yeah, they were just really good. I think that was a nice experience, even though it was quite stressful, to see it working with the images, which we didn't always have. Sometimes they would just say, this scene is about this. We haven't shot it yet. And that happens a lot with a lot of the projects we've done where we never see any images and we just have this bank of music that we, you know, you'll do things like, well, what if there's going to be a sort of tense scene or a sad scene, and we'll write music for it, and then we'll give it to the whoever's making the movie or film or TV show, and then they get back to us and say, yeah, this is working, or can you change this? So a lot of it's done blind, but it doesn't seem to be a problem. And I think most of it's done like that, but every project's really different. We're doing a documentary at the moment, and that's another, again, it's just completely different from doing like a film. They're all completely different.
Well, with a documentary, there's usually a lot of dialogue that you have to stay, or a monologue that you need to stay below. Yeah. So what kind of other difficulties or hurdles do you find doing that work?
That's a great point. A lot of it, where the dialogue sits, seems to be sort of in the mid-range of what you're doing. So often you'll have either very bassy or very trebly or a mixture of the two, and try not to step on the dialogue with having a lot of stuff in the middle. Which is something that we learned, I think, before the flood. No, it was 000. We did for that. We found out, oh, you'd want to stay away from that because it sort of ruins any dialogue or gets in the way. So there's all these tricks that you learn over the course of doing it for so long, and there's always something else to learn. As usual, we don't know everything.
Well, I can imagine that maybe it'd be fun to work for Christopher Nolan, because his film, like Tenet, got a lot of criticism for not being able to hear the just hear the sound effects and whatever Ludwig Göransson did.
Yeah, that was really. We watched Dunkirk the other day, and I found that to be the same. It was quite difficult to hear the dialogue. I guess it's, someone mentioned it maybe because it's been mixed for IMAX and stuff like that, and really. Not really for a stereo mix, and it's possibly that might have something to do with it, but maybe he just wants the music to be too loud. This could be that.
Well, I think there, yeah, as a score fan, I would love to just, you know, watch music videos where it's more sort of montages.
Yeah. Instead
of, because you know, the thing is, it's like, this is something like, what is a movie without music? Just real life, you know?
Yeah. That's a good point.
So if you were to, like, I think one thing I really like about your music, it borders on fantasy, And I don't mean like goofy fantasy. It just like it takes you places. It seems like so many of your tracks are stories in and of themselves. So do you have a baseline to say, hey, if we could lay this over Blade Runner and it fits, it's a Mogwai record. Like what is your temperature or litmus test for whether it's working or not?
If the person who's making the film says it is, it's usually because we always have this thing like, well, this is a really good song, but does it work with the picture? And then when you look at it, you always find yourself having to delete things or just have these little one hit things that are working for it. So it take there's a lot of tinkering to get it right. It very rarely works. Donuts actually did work the first time we gave them donuts. Probably because there's no dialogue really, it's just the car going around in the that one works without much else getting put onto it from the demo stages, but mostly you're always getting a sort of back and forth between the directors. So yeah, it's a weird way to work because we're just used to being in the studio on our own and not having any outside influence, and it's quite a you have to surrender a little bit of your whatever it is. Soul.
Ego.
Exactly. Yeah, ego is better than soul, isn't it? Yeah, a little bit of ego. And to take direction from people who don't always necessarily understand music, how a musician might, and they have sort of abstract terms of trying to explain it to you, and you have to try and understand what they mean. So, yeah, it can be tricky.
Well, I kind of like the expression, give them what they want, but not necessarily what they're asking for. It's a
Yeah.
very sort of difficult, nebulous line to maneuver.
Yeah, I
But
know.
what about when you are making the album? How do you decide, like, yes, this is it?
Like a normal record, like a
Yeah,
normal Mogwai
getting away
record.
from film or picture.
I mean, you never know, it's never finished. I think that's a common phrase as well. Like, you don't know when to stop. And I think that's the good point about having someone we've had, like Dave Fridman producing. They're the sort of quality control on what you're doing because they're not in the band, they're involved with working on that record, but they have a sort of bigger picture kind of thing. And we've tried to produce stuff where I think we're good at writing the songs and all that, but we've never been great at deciding when it's finished. So to have a producer involved has always been really helpful.
Well, I guess that makes sense because again, being in the design field myself, like we can just tinker with a plan, and it gets to a point where, hey, we need to pick a horse and ride it, otherwise we're not gonna deliver on time. And so I guess somebody
Yeah.
with, you know, the foresight of the path that the album needs to travel, it's like,
Yeah.
go, we got, you know, albums, Bandcamp, whatever it is,
Yeah.
like
Yeah.
vinyl.
And then you've got, if you're making buildings, you've always got the sort of local council telling you, no, that you can't do that. It's probably the same thing. There's a lot of people saying, no, this is not possible.
So, in the film score world, when the composition or the production of an album happens, it's with elements called stems. Do you work in the same, like, how does that work when when Mogwai's making an album by yourself versus when you're working on a studio picture? Do stems work in your with synthesizers? How does that combination or compilation process work?
I don't even think we really think about it like that. We don't. No, I don't. No, because the thing, what you mean is like when you give it to the music editor and they've got the full song for the film, and then they'll just delete stuff if it's not working with the dialogue, which has been what's been happening with the latest thing that we've been doing, because we've given them too much. But you don't really think about it like that when you're doing a record. It's just more piling on enough stuff that it actually sounds like a finished song. It's so abstract, isn't it? It's a very difficult thing to talk about. Like, it doesn't, you never know how what you're doing when you go in there. You never have a clear idea of what you want, and I don't believe that anybody does. I think that people just keep tinkering until something sounds good. Hang on, is that my daughter trying to get in the room? She's crawling around, sorry. But yeah, so it's very different. It's just a very different process.
Well, I can respect that because I think one of the things that I notice is that you know, you may have a really like a distant piano, and then some real sharp guitars. And I guess where I'm going with that is if at one day of the week you start working on the piano and you get like, this sounds great, but we need to add it. And then 2 months later you come up, well, hey, we forgot the guitar, just this doom, 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 doom. Like those are the individual pieces that you could just layer on top. And I think you were saying that before, you just throw a lot of stuff and hopefully it'll all taste good when you get done cooking.
You do end up deleting. That's the hardest part, actually, because people get quite attached to their parts that, everyone in the band are like, oh, I really like this part. But then you realize that it's just not working in the context of the song. And they're like, well, I think we have to delete this. And it's always a bit, we don't argue in the band ever, but it's always a bit like, probably passive aggressive. Just like, I don't think this is working. Maybe we should either change it or throw it out. So that's always the most difficult part, because you can just see people's shoulders going like, oh, spent ages on that.
I'm
But
going
if you're
home, you
precious
guys. Taking
about
my
it,
ball and
yeah,
my bat, and
exactly. I gotta walk the dog.
yeah. Well, let's jump back to As the Love Continues. I think what is the most exciting about your process and listening to this as a consumer, it's not just the feeling that I get listening to your tracks. Sometimes, I mean, you have some really cool names. Like they're artsy, they're bold, they're nebulous, they're cool. I mean, I like it's what I want to do, Mom. It's like I once you could listen to that by itself, you're like, that sounds pretty good. I'm on a journey. But when you put that title, like you get the whole story. It's really great.
I like that people used to send us emails and probably letters actually a long time ago that they'd made up a story, because there's no lyrics usually, but they made up a story of what the song was about. And we would just be in fits laughing because it would, because, well, one, we hadn't ever thought about that. It's just music for us. But two, that they'd spent time and then had this experience that they wanted to tell the band about. And it was like so far off anything that we were thinking about. But that's quite good, because it's, if there aren't any lyrics in a song, you can just make it up, what the song is about. And it's quite nice.
So then what is what is fuck off money about?
Oh, I can't even talk about that one. Oh, that's maybe one of the more I can't talk about that one song
Okay.
titles.
I had in my mind,
Do you know what? Probably loads of them are like that, actually.
Okay. Well, do you know that the Bill Murray movie Kingpin from probably 25 years ago, where he gets to a point where in the end of the movie he goes, "Now I now have enough money I can buy my way out of anything."
I watched that not too long ago, actually. It's pretty funny.
It really is, it really is. Well, I was listening to Midnight Flit Flit. Am I saying that right? Midnight Flit. And I think, like as I was saying before, a lot of your tracks kind of take you on this journey, especially when there's no lyrics or very few lyrics. But I feel like that's very Pink Floyd, not to say inspired, but it feels almost like that same level of like airiness, otherworldly. Do you ever try to craft a track as an homage or a love letter or just direct inspiration from people who inspire you?
All the time, probably. I mean, a lot of the band are into a lot of krautrock stuff, and we've tried to incorporate, it's maybe not that obvious, but we've tried to incorporate some of that in our music. And I like a lot of electronic music, and I even write songs on Ableton Live, but the rest of the band don't, so it's always a pain in the neck to try and do the demos like that. But yeah, we do that a lot, and I think you could even call it stealing if you wanted to. I think that happens in most music. But yeah, I hadn't thought Midnight Flit has been Pink Floydy, because we actually don't really like Pink Floyd. But we're always getting told that we sound a bit like them, and I'm like, all right, okay, weird.
Well, trust me, I was not making a parallel that there was like.
It's fine if you are. It's funny. But yeah, that's a funny, that started off quite minimal, really, and then we asked Atticus Ross to do the string part for it, and it just took off. We got this, like, I think Bulgarian orchestra who were obviously good but pretty cheap, and then he wrote all the string part for it as a sort of gift to the band. And it just took off after that. It's such a big sounding song, whereas it didn't really sound like that to begin with.
Well, I like I said, I love your music, and one of the things I'm reaching out to you on behalf of is because I'm very taken to the bands that I found on Bandcamp. I just love how it's an independent platform, but it still has some major players in the music industry. I guess what is the involvement with Bandcamp, and how does the merchandise flow from you guys to consumers using that portal or platform?
Now, do I know this answer? I'm not sure. I don't know. We just we when the pandemic was in full flight, we thought it'd be good to do those, like, well, just to put stuff out that people couldn't get hold of usually, and then we'd do it on the Bandcamp Friday thing, where you
Okay,
get
yeah.
like a even bit, but they're just so much more generous to the bands, and I can see why people really like that rather than just sticking it on Spotify or whatever. And I think also it's really good for younger bands because it's difficult enough, but without someone taking most of your or a lot of your sort of revenue from it. So we just thought it'd be good to do some stuff on that. As for merchandise, I didn't even know we could sell merchandise on there. I had no idea. I'm so non-music industry, like I'm the least knowledgeable about all that stuff. As long as the mortgage is paid, I don't ask questions.
Just stick to doing
Yeah,
what you're best at, making the music.
yeah. It's more dangerous if I'm involved in the business decisions, then we probably wouldn't still be a band.
Fair enough. Paddy Burns, everybody. He sounds absolutely like a Scottish
Oh,
superhero.
that's not bad, by the way. It's usually terrible.
Well, thank you. That means a lot. I mean, it's just sort of an impromptu. So, well, can just to maybe round this off with some fun stuff. You talked about the documentary earlier. Can you talk about that? What the subject is, title, things like that?
Don't think I'm allowed to. It's weird because we've also just signed an NDA for another thing that we're doing, and I haven't even told my mum what it is. Like, I'm just like, I'm not allowed. But
Well, I won't
it's
tell her either.
another.
If you tell me, I won't tell
No,
her.
right. It's just a. It's a pretty interesting documentary about an insane. I don't know what the American word is for chancer. Someone who has taken extreme liberties with other people's money. Put it that way. And it's another Apple TV thing, which I am allowed to say. But yeah, it's just been just fun doing documentary stuff because it's got to be quite exciting music when you know, and there's it's quite oh, it's a weird story. I hope you get to see it. I hope it comes out. Well,
Okay.
these things sometimes fall through, but they're just so much fun to do the music for. And we've given them so much as well. So yeah, we were in a good creative flow moment while we did it.
Okay. Well, you were teasing me with absolutely no
I
detail, so I don't know
know.
if I'm
It's
excited or
pathetic.
insulted.
I know. I might just be lying about
Fair
the
enough. Well, why don't we
whole
round? Okay, so here's the fun stuff. You've got some kids. When you're not recording in the studio, what do you like to do with your kids, and what do you think is the most fun thing you've done this summer?
Oh, probably the Barcelona Primavera thing because my 5-year-old came to see us play. And she's usually in bed by that point, but she came to the show and I think she really enjoyed it. And just as we were leaving the stage, I ran onto the side of the stage where she was and I grabbed her and took her out. And she was like waving to all these people. And I think she was like, "What is going on?" But that was really good fun. Just think that was basically the first holiday we've had since COVID started. So it was just nice to be there for a week and get some sun and some relaxation. It was great fun. But yeah, just good hanging out with them. They're very funny.
Last night I took my daughter to there's a movie chain in the States called the Alamo Draft House, and they did
Right.
a pretty big event called the Ultimate Willy Wonka Party. So I took her to that, and Paris Themen and Julie Dawn Cole, who were two of the kids in the movie, did a Q&A, and I hosted the whole event, and it was so much fun. So she'd never seen that, let alone on the big screen. So she was similarly like enthralled with the live event. So good
That's
times for
cool.
kids.
I know, I know.
Can you give me, if you can give young Barry three albums, whether they're Mogwai or not, to kind of influence or enforce his young love of music, what would you like to just drop on him one day and blow his mind?
Very depressing divorce album by Bob Dylan called Love on the... God, what's it called? Blood on the Tracks, okay. That my dad used to listen to, but I got into much later. Anything by Noi, probably. Just love that music. Probably a lot of German music that I would have liked to have learned about earlier in my life. But and then probably maybe Low, the band Low, because that's how you do quiet music quite powerfully. And I think that's a real... I went to see them live just before the pandemic, and it was just the most amazing thing to watch. I've seen them loads of times before, but they seem to be one of these bands who just keep getting better and better as they get older. Great.
And I have to ask, what was the first concert you remember going to? What was the first album you remember either buying, getting, stealing, okay, getting from a cousin that you shouldn't have been listening to?
Yeah. My aunt brought me a Bronski Beat album back from like a bootleg tape from I think the Greek island of Corfu, and I remember just listening to that. I remember finding out later that the track order was wrong when I found the real version of it. I was like, ah, that's the wrong order. And the first concert I remember going to was, you probably wouldn't have heard of them, but they were a Manchester baggy band called Spiral Carpets. In Spiral Carpets, yeah, they're quite big here. And I went with my cousin to this horrible, you know, one of those like black box venues where the sound is terrible and all that, but because it was the first concert, it's like, this is amazing. So yeah, I've listened to them recently and they've got like two good tunes.
Yeah, your tastes have infinitely expanded and
yeah.
Well, great, Barry. Well, hey, please enjoy your day off. Thank you so much for your time. Please, everyone, give Barry and Mogwai your time, your attention, your money. Go see Kin. Go watch 000. Check out his documentaries that he teased us with. And we will catch you next time.
All right. Oh, good.